From Dr. Ben Carson to the question of racism to Vladimir Putin, we've got you covered today.
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
I'm going to come back to this question a little later in the broadcast, but it's fascinating. It's a fascinating question to discuss. When questions were raised about Barack Obama as a presidential candidate or as president, it's always the race accusation. Why are you picking? You're picking on him because he's black. And yet, when Ben Carson gets picked on by the media, I don't hear those same charges of racism. You're picking on him because he's black. Seems like some kind of double standards got me curious. This is Michael Brown. You're listening to The Line of Fire, 866-348-7884. Boy, there's a whole lot going on right now with political correctness run completely amok. There is a mall in New York and then a mall, at least one other part of the country, where they substitute, instead of a normal Christmas display, they've got like the space age glacier kind of thing. They got thousands of complaints. Like, what is this? And it seems people like some of their old traditions. Stuff happening on one in New York, one in North Carolina. Major malls. I think it was Roosevelt Field in New York and South Park Mall in North Carolina. And all these protests. What happened to the Christmas festivities in the mall? Even just the mall, even though it's commercial, people are missing this, and a lot of tensions on college campuses over race issues. The president of the University of Missouri has just resigned over complaints about the way he handled race issues on the campus. These are things that need to be addressed. They are things that need to be discussed. On the other hand, political correctness can run completely amok. So we're going to sort these issues through. And a lot more. Forbes magazine has named Vladimir Putin as the world's most powerful man. We'll mention that as well. 866-34-TRUTH. And I've got a few questions I'm going to put out for you as well. Let me put this out, and then I want to introduce a guest in studio with me, Pat Schatzlein. We're going to have a great time talking about a lot of issues with Pat, and we're going to continue to interact on lots of the latest news. But here's a question for you. Here's a question for you. If you'll watch some of the old roasts, things that I grew up watching, the Dean Martin roast where they'd roast a celebrity, if you were Italian, you were going to get smashed as an Italian. If you were a Jew, you're going to get smashed as a Jew. If you were black, you're going to get smashed as black. And everybody could be attacked. You're Puerto Rican, you're going to get smashed as Puerto Rican. Everybody would crack jokes and so on. And you watch some of it and you get uncomfortable, because things would obviously go too far, although it was all in the name of comedy and people did it in good fun and enjoyed it and even asked for it being on those shows. We've gone to the exact other extreme now, where you can get in trouble if you wear a Halloween costume and it's, say, like a Mexican hat and a poncho. Now you're being insensitive to Mexican immigrants. We've gone the other way. Which is better? Is there a happy medium? We'll talk about that today. 866-34-TRUTH. Have we gone completely crazy with political correctness and you don't want to offend it? Maybe I just offended people by even asking if that's offensive. That's on the one hand. On the other hand, do you want to go back to the old days where ethnic slurs and jokes, that was just kind of a way of life? I want to get your feedback on that. 866-34-TRUTH. Oh, and Starbucks in the news, too, removing Christmas holiday imagery from their cups. So one outraged customer has decided that he's got a plan to address that. All right, we got a bunch of things to cover. We come back, I want to introduce my guest, Pat Schatzlein, author of a number of books. His wife Karen's written as well. And to weigh in, 866-34-TRUTH.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome back, friends, to The Line of Fire, 866-348-7884. We'll have a broadcast as we get closer to Christmas about whether Christians should celebrate that or not. That's not the focus today. But it is interesting just to see Americans reacting to this extreme political correctness and removing anything religious from society as well. My newest article says that we can absolutely turn the tide, and I talk about areas of pushback in the society where, by God's grace, we are taking ground. Before I go to your phone calls, I want to introduce a guest in studio with me, Pat Schatzlein. And Pat, since we're sitting here together, tell our listening audience who you are. Many of them will know who you are, have read your books or seen you on various programs. But for those who don't know, tell us who Pat Schatzlein is.
Dr. Brown, I'm so glad to be with you. You know, you have literally been one of the greatest voices in my life, and I just want to bring honor to you. But we travel all over America. We're Remnant Ministries International. And my wife and I, Karen, we live in Birmingham, Alabama. And for the last 18 years, we've traveled a couple million miles. For many years, I spoke at many of the large youth conferences around the world and all over the U.S. And now God has so shifted that and stirred us up. It all started with writing my first book and then now getting ready to write my fourth book called Altarless. But basically, our heartbeat is to raise up voices that will stand through the power of the Holy Spirit for truth in this generation. And we're seeing it happen. We launched the I Am Remnant conferences across America. We're getting ready to start that tour again. And it's a call to encounter with God, the supernatural, altar calls. We see a lot of miracles. We see a lot of in this generation get set free from the lies of culture. Get set free in the middle of our services. They'll come running up to us. There may be a cutter. And their scars disappear. A lot of that kind of stuff. But really, our call that Karen and I stand with is just seeing this generation have the encounter. Watch God set them free. And it happens constantly.
Why are young people cutting themselves?
You know, I write about it in my second book, I Am Remnant. I talk about they were wrong, how this generation has been lied to. And through culture, through experiences, through words. And so what happens is a generation is so built up with the deep scars, the orphan spirit, all the things where 34% have grown up without a dad, 72% in the inner city, all the stuff, all the lies of the enemy, and they get to a point where they cut themselves, and cutting's not new. We saw it with the prophets of Baal. I always say that when a generation starts cutting, they're screaming, somebody show me where God is. Mm. And because it's a scream to get free. And basically, it's the only pain they can handle, it's the only pain that they are in charge of.
Yeah.
And so they go and they cut themselves. And it is the craziest thing. The Lord began to do this when I wrote the first book, Why Is God So Mad at Me? And the concept, he's not mad at you, he's mad about you, but it breaks the lies of culture, the lies of homosexuality. Why am I sick? Why am I broke? We began to see it. And I was out in California speaking at a big thing called Spirit West Coast. And my son came in. Nate's a youth pastor now out in California. But he came running into the speaker's trailer out at this big festival. He said, Dad, you got to come outside. I said, why? And I had flown all night and gone up and spoke on this massive stage with all these bands. And he said, Dad, you got to come outside. I said, Nate, I got to go rest. I'm going to my hotel to rest. And he said, Dad, come outside. I walk outside, and they're lined up, probably 20, with their youth pastors, weeping. And they're showing me their arms were in the middle of the service. First time it happened, all their scars disappeared. I said, Lord, what is that? I don't get that. Why are you doing this miracle? And then the Lord later spoke to me.
Incredible.
He said, son, when the love of a father enters in, he not only heals the inside, but he transforms the outside.
Wow.
And you know what's so crazy is when I expect it to happen, it doesn't happen. When I don't expect it, I was at a big conference in Mississippi at Miles College this summer, spoke, students are crying out to God, weeping on their faces, wailing. And one by one, they started coming up to me going, well, you were preaching tonight. I'm a cutter. And they peeled off because most of the cutters wear these things over their arms. And so I don't know why the Lord began to do that, but it began to happen.
Incredible.
It blew my mind.
Incredible. And what a sign of the Father's love in a demonstrable way.
Yeah.
So this generation,
right,
they are raised around sexting.
Right.
They are raised, and for those who don't know what that is, young people as young as middle school sending naked pictures to one another via text on their cell phones.
Right.
They're raised around that. they have access to pornography at the youngest of ages.
Right.
Stuff that in my most sinful days shooting heroin, I didn't even know existed.
Well, they say the number one age that is growing in porn is kindergarten.
Yeah.
Because these kids are all given phones, and they can it's instant access. Right. And it releases the chemical in the brain like the hit of cocaine, and they don't know what that is, and it does something to them. Anyway.
Yeah, so they're raised around that. They're raised with all types of crazy reality TV shows. They're raised with the celebration of homosexuality and bisexuality, now transgender issues. They're raised around that. Many of them raised in broken homes. And then they're raised in this culture where certain things are taboo. You can speak against God. You can speak against the Bible. You can speak against Christianity. You can't speak against certain behaviors or lifestyles, etc. This hyper-political correctness.
Right.
All right. It seems we're always told dropping out of the churches and not interested in God, but you talk about a remnant.
Oh, come on.
All right. So what is happening among these young people? We're going to talk in a moment about the college campuses and the climate there. Yeah. What is happening?
I can literally tell you every single week, tolerance has no boundaries. Anybody that declares you got to have tolerance just keeps pulling. It has no boundaries. It's a lack of conviction. And so what I mean by that is they've been taught all of this stuff, and this generation is waking up. I'm telling you, I've seen it happen. They are waking up and saying, enough's enough. I could show you video clips of, we did an I Am Remnant in Pennsylvania, and there was about 8,000 there. They came running. I had warned the security, because it's union guys that get hired for the
year.
I had warned them, guys. They're going to run down. They're not rushing me. They're not rushing the stage. It's going to happen. All of a sudden, one little girl, about 13 years old, comes running down in the middle of my message. This happens to us nearly every week. But right in the middle of my message, the conviction, the love of God coincide. They run together. The power of God, the goodness of God draws them to repentance. They start running to the altars and sliding in, crying out to God. Mm. And I'm about to write about this in Altarless, my new book. But and the reason why I say that is, and they're coming down and saying, we've been lied to. We've been lied to. You know how many homosexual young people come to me and say, through tonight, through what God did, I've figured out that I've been lied to my whole life. I was called a certain thing in kindergarten. I was said this. I was told I was feminine. I was told this way. And they go, they suddenly wake up. It's like the scales peel off.
Yeah.
Recently, I was in a service where with someone you and I are very close to, and it was the Sunday after the Supreme Court ruling. And in that service in South Alabama, 7 lesbians came to do whatever, disrupt, I don't know. 5 minutes into my sermon, they ran to the altar, completely set free. One is a part of our RaiseTheRemnant.com. One is a part, she says, I want to be trained for ministry. Completely set free. The anointing breaks the yoke. But I'm back to your question. We see it that this generation is going, they're telling us what we're supposed to be. The college campus is telling us that we're supposed to be all this, but they're waking up to truth. And you and I both know, we wrote both right about this so greatly, but truth is the new hate speech, but the enemy of truth is silence. And God is saying, I am looking for those that will stand up. And it happens in our services when we tell them, you are the remnant. Romans 11, verse 5, so too at the present time there's a remnant chosen by grace. Identity breaks curses. When I brought my little girl from China, at the moment we got her, she was 9 months old. The moment I gave her a name, it broke the curses of yesterday. So God spoke to us. I was out jogging one day, and I don't really jog, I loiter, but I was standing on a street in Dallas, and the Holy Spirit just hit me and said, I'm going to raise up a remnant. So I ran back to my hotel room, and I just began to research the word remnant. And the Lord said, it's the ones I raise up at the darkest time in history that will stand for truth, that will stand for the supernatural.
Yeah. And friends, this is what we are right in the middle of right now, friends. Across the country, yes. God raising up a remnant. Let me say it again. It's not time to throw in the towel. It's not time to crawl into a cave and die. It's not time to lick our wounds. It's time to stand strong and do what's right, because we keep hitting this enough is enough point. And you mentioned the silence and the Trap of Silence. There's a brand new book by Dr. Al Mohler. He'll be on the air with me tomorrow, God willing. We Cannot Be Silent, Speaking Truth to a Culture Redefining Sex, Marriage, and the Many Very Meaning of Right
wow.
and Wrong. What I found very interesting, Pat, is that Russell Moore, Southern Baptist leader, wrote his Onward book. This just came out a couple months ago. I wrote my book, Outlasting the Gay Revolution, officially released in September. Al Mohler's book It just came out in the end of October. So brand new book now. And I was watching leader after leader after leader. We're all thinking the same thing. We're saying, okay, things have been redefined a certain way around us, but that just means we engage more wisely. It doesn't mean that we stop engaging. In fact, friends, you can get Dr. Moeller's book together with my book, Outlasting the Gay Revolution, at a reduced price this week, so we can get both of these resources out to you, because it's amazing how much they complement each other. To find out more, go to my website, Ask Dr. Brown, askdrbrown.org. You'll see a video you can watch right on the homepage that'll tell you more. Askdrbrown.org. We'll be right back.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Do you realize that Starbucks wanted to take Christ and Christmas off of their brand new cups? That's why they're just plain red. In fact, do you realize that Starbucks isn't allowed to say Merry Christmas to customers? Well, I decided, instead of simply boycotting, well, why don't we just start a movement? So when I went in and I asked for my coffee, they asked for my name, and I told them my name is Merry Christmas. So guess what, Starbucks? I tricked you into putting Merry Christmas on your cup. And I'm challenging all great Americans and Christians around this great nation, go into Starbucks and take your own coffee selfie. And then I challenge you to not only share this video so that the word gets out, but let's start a movement. And let's call it, I don't know, hashtag Merry Christmas Starbucks.
Yeah, that was former Arizona pastor Joshua Feuerstein. Not sure how to pronounce his name. I just see him online sometimes, but his videos have gone viral. That one has gone to I think it's been viewed like 1.2 million times on Facebook, and I'm not sure how popular the hashtag is. But he's saying time to push back on Merry Christmas, time to push back on the political correctness in our society that says you can't even mention these things. We mentioned in the earlier a couple of malls, big malls in America, where they got rid of their annual Christmas display and put in something that people said looked more like a space-age glacier. And after protests, said, okay, we'll go back to the original one. So what do you think about that to a company like Starbucks, which is no surprise that they have the perspective that they have, no surprise that they're as liberal as they are. So to have no Christmas imagery, is that the kind of thing you want to push back on? I'm not saying that Christmas is a holy day for everyone, but I'm asking, this is the kind of thing where we just say, okay, enough is enough. 866-34-TRUTH. We'll take some calls. We'll go to Brick, New Jersey. Eddie, welcome to the Line of Fire.
Hey, how you doing?
Doing well, thanks.
I called you like a week ago about Paul and Colossians. You answered my question. I was just dumbfounded. But when it comes to Christmas, the base of Christmas is based off of a pagan holiday when the Greeks became Catholics and Paul and converted all the Greeks and the Catholics. They, you know, the Catholics had a special holiday. So the base of Christmas is based off of a Greek god. So to add Jesus onto that is kind of like wrong. So whatever God blessed is blessed, but whatever man try to do or try to do things on their own, it doesn't look good in God's eyes. So
got it.
That's why I don't celebrate Christmas. I'm not condemning anybody, you know.
Uh-huh.
But the only problem I have with Christmas, the base of Christmas, is based off of a Greek mythology holiday.
Now, tell you what, Eddie. First, I really appreciate your attitude in approaching these things. And we're going to come back. We do this normally every year, sometime in December, have the annual Christmas debate, should Christians celebrate it or not.
Mm-hmm.
But some would say, yeah, there's no question it was originally a pagan holiday. And then what happened was, as many pagans were getting saved, they said, well, let's redeem this day. Let's turn it around. God's a redeemer. It was a pagan holiday, but let's turn it around and redeem it and use it for the glory of God and celebrate the birth of Jesus. So that's the question. But Eddie, so we'll come back to the larger pagan question, but you raise a fair issue. Should we push back against that. When society rejects Christmas, are they rejecting Christ? Even if it has pagan origins, and even if there's no biblical basis for the Christmas tree and all the other stuff, and Jesus being born December 25th, when society rejects it, why is society rejecting it? So you raise a fair point, Eddie, and one that we'll continue to discuss. But do we push back? Let's go to Deal, Maryland. Jenny, welcome to the Line of Fire.
Hi. I worked for the Postal Service for 30 years, and just within the last probably 15 to 20, we were advised that we could not say Merry Christmas to our customers.
Really?
Yes, and you would think that the Postal Service, wanting to generate as much revenue as they could, would try to please everyone, but it seems like the Christians are just being pushed aside for the liberals that decide that they don't want to hear it. Well, sometimes when you don't want to hear things, you just don't listen to it.
All right, so question, did they tell you why?
Nope.
They didn't tell you why.
We could not say Merry Christmas.
Wow.
The only thing we could say was season's greetings or happy holidays.
Wow.
Of course, the ones that I've worked with that were devout Christians, we said Merry Christmas anyway.
Uh-huh.
And if people took exception to it, well, that's their problem.
Now look, growing up in a Jewish home, I'm sensitive to the fact that you have Jews who don't celebrate Christmas and it's Happy Hanukkah, so Happy Holidays works fine. But since the vast majority of Americans identify as Christians, and since I imagine at the post office, you're doing extra business there, not because of people shipping Hanukkah gifts, but people shipping Christmas gifts, right? So you're doing extra business.
Actually, you know, there's quite a few customers that I had that were Jewish. Of course, I'm retired now, but I've had quite a few customers that were Jewish, and they never took exception. Actually,
of course.
They would let me know, hey, I'm Jewish, and we celebrate Hanukkah, but, you know, it's all good.
Exactly, right. And it's a positive thing. It's not proselytizing.
That's right.
Thank you. And if I worked at the post office, even if I'm not into saying Merry Christmas, I would have said it. Pat, what's your take on this?
You know, what's so funny is my wife, Karen, she's bold. And anytime she hears season's greetings, whether it's going into Walmart or Happy Holidays, she deliberately turns around and says Merry Christmas. Well, not only that, it's just the childhood, it's kids, it's a season of joy, it's all those different things. And some of the religious, I've even seen Christians say we shouldn't say that. And I love to go back and forth with them. But you know what? Here's the bottom line. Free speech or who we are is such under attack. It only works for certain groups. You're only allowed to have the First Amendment of certain groups. And there's a moment where you just rise up and you just go, you know what? Merry Christmas. That's a part of who we are as a nation. And actually, Christ redeemed that. And the church redeemed that very holiday. So I have no trouble with it. I believe in it.
Yeah. And again, it's the cultural issues. It's not even the issue of celebrating Christmas or not, and
right.
Should Christians, and what are the origins, but why is culture rejecting it?
Because it has the word Christ in it. That's it. That's what it boils down to. And, you know, you watch on Fox News, and you'll watch O'Reilly, or you watch somebody like that, and I get excited about it because they don't want you to say the word Christ. That's what it boils down to. It doesn't have to do with anything else. It's Christ is right in the middle of it. And so people loved it when they said Xmas, and then didn't realize that X in the Hebrew, what that actually means. And so it's a stand against what we believe as Christians. It all comes down to is they're fighting us.
Yeah, and even that they're replacing with X being the sign of Greek ichthus, the sign of the fish, which was Jesus Christ, God's Son, Savior.
Right.
Right. This, people didn't quite know what they were doing. All right. And listen, yeah, in different parts of the world, you have to realize Christians get heavily persecuted at Christmas. The people that we work with in India, for example, told us about a persecution that broke in the state of Orissa years ago, where they started brutalizing the pastors right around Christmas time, and people were getting martyred because that is what the world associates. So separate question, the one that Eddie raised, fair enough, origins of Christmas, should be celebrated or not, put that on the shelf. The other thing is something that we can't deny, which is society wanted to push Christmas out because Christmas has to do with Jesus. That's the bottom line.
Remember when that
came to the world. It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. Your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
In the name of Jesus! In the name of Jesus!
It's gotten to the point where the people who are at the top, who make the decisions on behalf of the university, if they do not know what to do to foster an environment that is inclusive and safe for students who identify as marginalized on this campus, then they need to go and put somebody in place who does know how to deal with these issues.
All right. There is tension on the University of Missouri campus. And right before the broadcast today, news came that the president of the campus has resigned. He said, I thought we were just talking about Christmas. I thought we were talking about Starbucks. Yeah, we are. There's some really interesting issues here. This is Michael Brown. Welcome to The Line of Fire. I'm sitting with Christian author and speaker Pat Schatzlein, and we're going to be interacting through the day about lots of relevant issues. But here's the thing. We need to be sensitive to issues that are truly offensive and to things that people really do suffer because of discrimination. That's on the one hand.
That's right.
On the other hand, there is a political correctness that has gone completely amok. Now, Pat, you mentioned watching sports news. You followed what's happened at the University
right.
of Missouri. I'm bringing all these things together because there's a right, there's a wrong. We're trying to sort that through. What did you hear about what happened on the campus there?
Basically, there's because I was listening to the football network when I was driving yesterday. I love college football. And Coach Gary Pinkel and 30 different players, and he said he was behind him. 30 players said, hey, we're not playing this Saturday against BYU, or Friday night against BYU, which would have cost, just to get out of the contract, $1 million instantly, and then SEC Network was going to film it and all this other kind of stuff. And so it was a major money thing. And when it boils down to, and basically what I heard was they believe that this president had not stood for the rights of African Americans and had basically ignored all these issues and all these violations and all that other kind of stuff. And so they were all protesting, and it broke out on the campus, the protest. And so now 30 players had said they weren't going to play, which now meant the SEC Network, which is owned by ESPN, would have lost all this money. It became a money issue this morning is what had happened.
Right. So that could have added extra pressure. I mean, I can't imagine being a university president
right.
and stepping down. I mean, that is major, major. Joey, grab clip number four. These are football players who are protesting. And I want you to hear some of what's happened on the campus. Because, again, here's the fine line we have to walk. There is an insensitivity. There is a
right.
discrimination. There are real hardships that Black Americans and others have suffered and second-class treatment and all that.
That's
we
right.
need to recognize that. On the flip side, there is this political correctness where you have to level everything out, so you end up offending large number of people. Excuse me. So clip number four.
Protests over racial issues stretched through the night on the Columbia campus of the University of Missouri. Frustrations flared at the October 10th homecoming parade when Wolf wouldn't get out of his car to speak with demonstrators who were blocking him. At least 30 football players announced on Saturday night that they would not participate in team activities until Wolf is gone.
Wow. Yeah, now, is there a better way to handle things? Does this now put power in the hands of any group of students that want to protest? These are interesting questions to address, and I'll tell you this, the only answer ultimately for America is going to be the gospel. If we do not
That's
unite
right.
around biblical gospel truths, we are sunk. 30 seconds, Pat. Campuses, can the tide be turned?
Absolutely. There's an awakening breaking out on the campuses. There are people that are standing up saying enough's enough, and it has nothing to do even with all the social issues are just an end result of poison that's been on the campuses and all those and all the classrooms and all the humanism and all the stuff that's taught. But what I'm saying is I believe that on these campuses there are voices that are rising up where they're seeing outbreaks of God. We saw it on the University of Alabama campus. We saw, I live in Birmingham, where a move of God broke out, where there was a couple thousand students every week that came together and cried out to God. So I believe, yes, I believe it's much like the 60s, what we're seeing in the 60s,
yeah.
and then the Jesus Revolution that began to break out in the 70s.
Exactly. I was part of that. We went on strike in our high school.
Come on.
I helped lead the strike movement and
awesome.
Then got saved right after that. All right, we'll be right back.
Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the line of fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome back, friends, to the Line of Fire. I'm sitting with Christian author, apologist, and speaker Pat Schatzline. We're talking about a number of things happening in culture, especially with younger people today. And a couple segments back, we played a clip from former Arizona pastor Joshua Feuerstein, and he's talking about Starbucks and how they've eliminated any Christmas imagery. They've just got the red cup now during the holidays. And he went in, when they said, "What's your name?" He said, "Merry Christmas." Mm-hmm. So they then had to write that on his cup. I don't go to Starbucks. I don't know how it works, but I guess they write your name on the cup. So they were now writing Merry Christmas on it, and he's saying, "Hey, everybody go in there and do that. Just make them write it." Is that the kind of statement we want to make, that we need to make? When is political correctness going too far and shutting out any type of religious expression at all from society? Or you just have to make all, everything's equal. You can have one Muslim, one Jew, and 98 Christians, but you have to deny Christianity for the one Muslim and one Jew so everybody feels at home. When is that run amok? And we're certainly seeing it run amok. What we're seeing on college campuses, and there are other campuses, look, what's happened at University of Missouri, wherever there have been racial slights, wherever there has been an right. unfair and unjust handling of racial issues, we must address it. It's a shame we're still talking about it in 2015, but we have to. But then you go to Yale, and there are professors that are in trouble there. I mean, wearing a Halloween costume. A certain Halloween, look, I'm the last person to advocate Halloween. I'm against the celebration of it because of so many wrong associations with it. But that being said, the idea that certain outfits are offensive and this outfit could offend a certain group, or when do things just go completely amok in the culture? 866-34-TRUTH. Let's go to Fairfax. All right, I was going to Fairfax. Tell you what, Pat, let's just get back to you on this. Okay. The atmosphere on college campuses. Let's paint a broader picture, then we'll get back to the political correctness. Right. Promiscuity, drug use, different things like that, all types of sexual experimentation, gender confusion. What goes on our secular campuses in America?
You know, we're seeing this. What's beginning to happen is we're having a generation wake up with scars and waking up with, they're realizing that the stuff that no one used to talk about, everyone's saying, you know, "I tried this, I tried that, I tried this, and now I'm empty. I have nothing left." That's why they're so open to the gospel. I'm seeing it happen on the campus. It's a reawakening like we saw in the 70s. But what's happening on the campuses is there's no boundaries, and they don't understand that God put all boundaries in place. And so now that the boundaries are gone, whether it's what's happened, it's beginning to take place in the youth pastor that came up to me in L.A. and said, "My high school is the first high school that he ministers to that has an abortion clinic." And so what's happening, it's getting younger and younger and younger. So when this generation is getting to high school or getting to college after coming out of high school, there's no boundaries. There's no stopping.
Right.
And so we get shocked
and
by rapes.
When you have boundaries, you do have the possibility of bigotry or discrimination. Right. But without boundaries, you have social and moral chaos.
That's exactly right. And God created the boundaries for our life. He said, "I created day and night, winter and summer." You know, it's all Genesis chapter 8. And so if we're not teaching a generation about boundaries, that's why they're sexting at the age of 11. And they're "Why are you upset about this? Why is it bad for me to do that? Why they, I can send a naked picture. I can." And now it's even got to place, my daughter is 12 years old, where literally I have to say to her, "Abby, I know you've got an Instagram account, but I can't allow anybody just to come on." What's happening is the loss of parenting. I was telling my wife the other day, we're the 80s generation. We were the me generation. Do whatever we want. We rebelled against everybody. And so now the parents that did all of that, we're reaping what we saw, what we did in the 80s. That no boundaries. We did whatever we wanted to do. And that's when it really, we saw it in the 60s and 70s. But the 80s was, I can do whatever I want. And so we've got the mirror of self-image continually fighting against the fact that God is saying, "No. At my cross is where you die to this thing, and you lay everything down." And so our goal is to teach a generation to rise up for truth through the power of the Holy Spirit. And if it doesn't line up with God's word, bottom line, it doesn't change. God's word doesn't change. And but you asked that question. There is a cultural revolution taking place on the campus that I believe is a generation crying out for truth. We've tried all the stuff, and we've come up empty.
Got it. So the emptiness manifests itself in all kinds of different ways. And many of the students might say that they are seeking, and others will not recognize they're seeking. But look, during the 60s, There was a massive spiritual search, but the church looked at it and just saw sex, drugs, rock and roll, rebellion, Eastern religion, didn't realize that at the heart of it, there was a spiritual search. So are young people looking? Now look, Nancy and I were talking the other day. Nancy and I were talking the other day that there's very little awe in our society. Like when we were kids, you know, everything was just amazing, and this new technology, and you go to the World's Fair, and they're going to have this, and wow, and just the universe, and wow, and it seems just with everything at your fingertips and the technology, there's not much awe that's left. But then it just kind of flattens everything out.
There's no nerve endings anymore. They don't feel anything. It's numb. It's a numbness. That's why I say this to leaders all the time. We must have the supernatural power of God that drops into a service where all of a sudden they're going, oh, wow, this is real.
And to even to come under conviction of sin.
Yes.
To feel that, to recognize, as you said, they've been lied to. These things are significant. But again, let me just take you on to a college campus here for a moment, okay? And clip number five, Yale University, controversy there. There's an interesting article by Milo Yiannopoulos, pronounced it probably half right, on Breitbart.com. Only conservatives can save the American campus, but should we?
My name is Michaela. You have called me other names.
I have 500 names to learn. Michaela, you have to understand, it has nothing to do with your race, my difficulty learning.
Well,
understand?
That's how it seems.
All right, so there are some college professors at Yale who have come under attack. Well, but this is offensive. I don't know. You got 500. Now, I don't know what's now considered offensive, what is not considered offensive. So let's just continue. Clip number six. This expands a little bit further.
Can you play music?
Yes.
Okay, I cannot play music. So when people try to talk to me about musical things, I don't understand.
How is this going?
I'm making an idea. I'm expressing that one of my limitations as a person, which I always had, was I wasn't very good with memorizing names, and it's got nothing to do with race. I think this conversation and its intensity will really seal it. And I hope in my prior interaction with you, I've never treated you with any disrespect.
And you haven't.
Yeah, so the thing is, little things are now taken as offensive. This is wrong, that's wrong. I have no idea. I didn't know that name or that term or using this or using that. You know, for example, the Washington Redskins, right? So using the the term Redskins, offensive to Native Americans. Well, obviously, Native Americans have suffered terribly in our history. We need to be sensitive to that. But then how far does it go? And then, you know, can you...
There's no boundaries.
Right. So young people today, Pat, in terms of this whole thing about being offended, there is also a culture where everybody has to win, where nobody can be criticized or corrected. And I've been reading about some of the most brilliant grads from some of our top institutions are having a hard time in the workplace because now they're dealing with real life where they're getting job reports and this is not satisfactory and they don't know how to handle that. Why such insecurity?
Well, contrary to culture, we're living in a time where everybody gets a trophy.
Yeah.
And true leaders are rising up going, no, everybody doesn't get a trophy. You need to lose. Losing is good for you. You need to fail in some areas. Mm-hmm. So we're raising a generation that doesn't understand failure because they've been told their whole life they're a princess. They've been told their whole life they're the greatest. And the fact of the reality is it's being pulled out of them, the ability to achieve. And so when you begin to study and begin to watch this generation rise up, and I'm telling you, I've watched it happen with so many young people where they're going, you know what, we've been told that there's no gender difference, there's no these other stuff. And they're waking up to the conscious of the fact that they're being lied to by culture. And they're going, this is not right. I was born a man. I was born a girl. And we're even seeing it attacked. And this is changing the subject for just a second, but I'm watching what's happening to Ben Carson, or I'm watching what's happening to Ted Cruz. They're only attacked because they're Christians. They're only under attack because they're a Christian, and everything's coming against them. But that boils back to what you ask, and I change subjects for just a minute, because we're watching this generation, and they're being told everything that they're not or everything they can't be, and they're told that all this stuff that we don't know if you're a boy or we don't know if you're a girl, and they're rising up, and it's like they're waking up going, why are you lying to us about this stuff? And that's going to happen on the college campus.
Yeah, one of the theses of my book, outlasting the gay revolution is that the more that we expose the lies,
right.
Principle number six is keep propagating the truth until the lies are exposed. The more we expose the lies, the more people realize we've been duped. We've been sold a bill of goods. And this whole thing that, Bruce Jenner is woman of the year, at a certain point people say, wait, the emperor's got no clothes. Am I the only one who sees this?
Exactly.
And you've got a whole generation that says, well, we're actually seeing it too, but we were told we're not allowed to say it or think it. Friends, that is going to backfire. More to come. 866-34-TRUTH.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Microaggression theory teaches us that when people are repeatedly cut, these little nicks, these little insults, these little exclusions, they don't develop calluses, they bleed to death. And so we will not let you be cut while you're at Kabul. We will protect you. Now, don't try to do it yourself. That's very dangerous. We will protect you from aggression.
All right. This is Jonathan Haidt. He is at Yale University, and he is describing a mock course about coddling versus strengthening. Joey, grab clip number eight. Listen to what he has to say. He's talking about the extreme political correctness and the idea that everybody has to be a winner.
Wow.
And this bizarre mentality that we have in our society today. Clip number eight.
Let me tell you a bit about our curriculum. Here's our pedagogy. Here's the way that we structure our courses. We're based on a very simple psychology, which is that people are fragile. People are so easily hurt. Anything that upsets you could trigger trauma, repressed trauma, unrepressed trauma, trauma that was you somehow put up there in the closet and then forgot to take down. There's trauma all over your mind and your memory. And we don't want to trigger your trauma. That could damage you. And this is especially true for members of the six protected classes. If you are a member of one of the six marginalized and oppressed groups, you are especially vulnerable. You've been traumatized and oppressed your whole life.
Yeah, a brilliant parody. And while God does care about the brokenhearted, and while Jesus reaches out to the marginalized and the hurting, and while God is tender and compassionate, and we should be as well, there is this extraordinary mentality, this hypersensitivity, which goes back to this all about me culture. And because of that, we have people that can't receive correction. We have people that if you don't affirm them 1,000 times, you can't speak into their lives. You have people where everything is some type of offense. You're offending some group to the point that I saw a little parody on YouTube. It was a cartoon of a comedian going to speak on a campus, and he couldn't say anything. Whatever he said, a joke he tried to crack, next thing you know, there's somebody's offended somewhere by it. It's just gone completely crazy. And, you know, Pat, speaking with Pat Schatzlein, I'm going to go back to the phones in a moment. But
right. But
Pat, look, if you talk about playing football and liking the sport and stuff, these guys are tough.
Right.
These guys are tough. I was watching some of the game last night with family, Dallas Philadelphia game, just hanging out, relaxing, and there was the top defensive player on the Dallas team. Had taken a bad hit, and he's just laying on the ground, but they think he may have gotten the concussion in the second and 6 weeks, and he's trying to talk his way back into the game.
Right.
That's how tough these guys are. Can you imagine if at halftime the coach came in and said, all right, look, you know, I know we're hurting, and how bad are we hurting? Because I don't think we should get hurt any longer. And
right.
How are you feeling? Or maybe soldiers before going out to battle against a terrorist stronghold in Taliban terrorists in Afghanistan. All right, look, I know some of you are afraid. How many of you are missing home? And I know it's sad because, you know, we had some casualties, and Yeah, I mean, it's terrible. It's war. But you got to tough it up and go for it. We don't cultivate that in our young people today, do we?
Well, and you know, the day is going to come where a coach can't holler at a player. And the concept of play another down, shake it off. You know, I used to say to my son, my wife would joke, she said his arm could be dangling and you'd still say, shake it off. And because we were, but that's the very fiber of our nation. That's why we don't live in Europe where everything's offensive. We live in a nation where it was created by the greatest generation, those that fight, those that got up at 5 a.m. and went to work, those that pressed through, those that lived through the depressions. That mindset is what's weakening our nation. And yesterday I was in Fayetteville, North Carolina, and a Special Forces guy said to me, he said, you know, the center of America is not Washington, D.C. It's right here in Fort Bragg where we have, you know, the 82nd Airborne. We've got Special Forces. He said, you remove us and we're done as a nation because we're willing to die. We go with one phone call. And if we remove the toughness of a generation that you got to get up, you get knocked back down, you got to play another play, you got to keep going. And that's what's happening. And pretty soon, the very concept that you could get hurt is going to remove the very charge inside of you to do anything. They're going to tell a generation, don't do it because something could happen.
Yeah, and I'm all for looking carefully with concussion protocol,
right,
especially with children playing football and all this. Of course, be wise,
right,
and look at this. And we're not just cultivating,
right,
violence. But I once saw a clip where there was a boxer who comes back to his corner and says, I think I broke my right hand, to his trainer. And the trainer says, well, what do you want me to do? You want to quit? He goes, no. He goes, I'm just telling you. He goes, all right, well, let's have a strategy. It's like, you just broke your hand. You're a fighter.
That's right.
But it's like, well, what do you want to do?
Yeah.
What do you want me to tell
Wrap
you?
Wrap it up.
Just, you know,
tuck
keep,
it.
Right. So there's something spiritually that we have to have like that. There's something emotionally, socially, where we just, the more that we talk about all of our problems and issues, I'm sure if we psychoanalyze some of the greatest missionaries and pastors and leaders and who's ever lived, We could have disqualified a bunch of them,
right,
based on some. I'm not talking about moral criteria or character. I'm talking about, well, they were emotionally not prepared and they were a little dysfunctional. Everybody, the whole world's dysfunctional.
That's right.
Get over it. In this world, you'll have trouble, Jesus said.
Right.
Be of good cheer. I've overcome the world. Hey, let me just grab one more call to close this out. I just want to grab. Well, I was trying to be nice and get to one last Starbucks call, but I won't. I guess folks couldn't hold
it. Scars on earth are testimonies in heaven.
All right,
you go through.
1 minute. How much of the problems we're seeing with our young people today is a direct result of broken homes?
Oh, I would literally say every altar call I've ever done, and we've done thousands, and I believe in the altar, and we see thousands running in. I say this all the time. My wife and I just did a marriage conference that 99%. Of the stories I hear in the altar calls are about the home and about their family, and that if we will get our home straightened out, we will shake a nation. We will see God transform a nation. It starts at home.
Starts at home. All right. Your book, Unqualified.
Yes.
What's it about?
The Lord began to speak to me. For years, I felt unqualified, traveling the world, seeing thousands touched. And the Bible talks about in 1 Corinthians 1, verse 26 through 28. I love the Message Bible, what it says, but it says, take a good look, friends, at who you were when you got called in this life. And it basically said, God uses the nobodies. The great ones of this generation are the nobodies.
All right. I Am Remnant.
I Am Remnant is the awakening all throughout history. In the darkest moment, God raises up a remnant to stand.
Why is God so mad at me?
The fact of the matter is, I heard it over and over for years, and God began to speak to me. He said, write a book and rewrite my resume to a generation. Tell them I'm not mad at you. I'm mad about you.
And Dehydrated by your wife, Karen.
That's all about encounters at the well, that you've got to get back to the place. We have a dried out, dehydrated generation that's got to get back to the living water.
And if folks want to get in touch with you, your website, what's the best way to do it?
RemnantIntl.com. RemnantIntl.com. RemnantInternational.com.
All right. Did you get that, friends? To be in touch with Pat Schatzlander, you can connect with him. Twitter, Facebook, do you prefer?
At Pat Schatz, at PatSchatz is everything, or Pat Schatzline.
All right. You'll be blessed. You'll be ministered to, and you'll come away with a lot of hope. My bottom line today, sometimes God's word to us is quit the pity party. You can tough it out. You're an overcomer. I'm with you and will help you. From Dr. Ben Carson to the question of racism to Vladimir Putin, we've got you covered today.
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Well, we are right on the front lines. You're a listener-sponsored voice of moral sanity and spiritual clarity in the midst of a society in chaos and a church all too often in compromise. I've got a special guest that drove from Fayetteville.
Well, I was in Fayetteville, but I'm from Birmingham, so I did the kind of the round trip thing.
All right, to join us right outside of Charlotte, North Carolina, Pat Schatzlein. I'll be introducing Pat to you in a bit. We were just talking in the last hour about political correctness run amok in our culture. I want to raise some issues relative to the treatment of Dr. Ben Carson in the media. I want to raise some very sensitive issues, and I'm going to do it with your help, 866-348-7884. A bunch of other things to get to. November 9th and then into the 10th, 1938, Kristallnacht, the night of broken glass, the night when the Nazis sought to experiment and see how far they could go. Adolf Hitler put into practice the exact counsel of Martin Luther in terms of how to deal with the Jews in his book Concerning the Jews and Their Lives, written in 1543. And in that book, Luther said that their Jewish synagogues could be set on fire, places of business broken down and destroyed, rabbis forbidden to teach under penalty of death, among other things. And what happened was the Nazis, the SS men, basically went to do this. They set synagogues on fire. They broke down and destroyed Jewish places of business, Jewish homes, to see whether the people would react, to see how the people would react, to see how far they could go with their programs. And in point of fact, the people did not react. In point of fact, there was not an outcry. Jews were told insurance will not cover you. There were Jews killed that night. There were Jews seriously wounded that night. Massive damage to the synagogues, to the places of business, and the homes. And the German people basically stood by idly. And then, of course, November 10th, the synagogues are on fire. Now it's the next day because it was launched at night. Kristallnacht, the night of broken glass, November 9th, 1938. The next day, the synagogues are still burning, houses, places of business broken down, others on fire. And one of the leading bishops of that day in the Lutheran Church said, how wonderful it is to see the synagogues on fire on the anniversary of the birthday of Martin Luther, because he was born November 10th. These are some of the truths, facts, historical anecdotes that are etched in the memory of many Jews around the world, especially the older generation, and religious Jews in particular know these things, know some of the ugly history well. What it tells us is this, that when you see something wrong in society, whatever the wrong is, I'm not pointing a finger in any direction now, but when you see wrong in a society, you've got to speak up. Listen, don't leave it to someone else. Right. Don't say, well, I know Dr. Brown is going to say something on his radio show. He's going to, no. Whatever place of influence you have in your home, in your school, in your place of business, in your community, your social media page, you speak up, you address it. If we would begin to do this, we'd understand what Francis Schaeffer said years ago, to paraphrase, that every abortion clinic in America needs to have a sign in front of it saying, open with the permission of the local church. If we would just begin to stand and do what's right in whatever we're facing in the society that is wrong, that is unjust, that is sinful, that is destructive, that is our corporate business, if we would do that, friends, we would see change come. And as Billy Graham said, courage is contagious, meaning that when one person stands strong, that the backbones of others are stiffened as well. Why not be that person? Not in anger, not in hatred, not with a mean spirit, but with truth and love. Why not be that person to stand up in your area of influence in society and make a difference? We'll be right back.
Send it, Lord.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks so much for joining us on The Line of Fire. We're going to be talking about a lot of issues, cultural-related issues and the like. 866-34-TRUTH to weigh in. I've got author, apologist, and Christian speaker Pat Schatzlein. There's a tremendous amount of youth ministry. We're going to talk to Pat as well. And I assure you, as you listen, you will be encouraged. All right. It was a little over 7 years ago when I was getting used to being on daily talk radio and trying to find my way. How much did I want to talk about politics? How much did I want to weigh in on other issues? How much theology, et cetera, et cetera? That I began to talk about the candidates running for Democratic presidential nomination, Hillary Clinton, Barack Obama, Republican nomination, John McCain, others. I took exception to something John McCain had said. And then one day I took exception to something Barack Obama had said. The second time I took exception to something that he had said, a caller called an African-American woman and she said, "Why do you have to bring up race all the time?" And I said, "What do you mean?" She said, "You're always bashing Barack Obama." I said, "Well, first, I've only mentioned him by name twice, and I mentioned John McCain the other day." I said, "But I like the political views of Alan Keyes. He's black, but I don't like the views of Barack Obama. It has nothing to do with skin color." I said, "I prefer the political views of Sarah Palin to Hillary Clinton. It has nothing to do with who's a woman, who's not a woman." I said, "Race is not the issue here." But then other callers said, "Why do you always have to bring up race? You talk about Barack Obama." I said, "I'm not bringing up race. It's the last thing I'm thinking about." So I realized, okay, this is an issue. I need wisdom in how to address it, how to gain the confidence of my listeners that race is not the issue to me. But now we have a very fascinating situation here. The media is aggressively and in certain ways ridiculously going after Dr. Ben Carson. And yet I'm not hearing people say the same way. Well, it's because of race. You're only going after him because he's black. You're only going after him because he's black. Look, Marco Rubio, people are going after his finances. Is that because he's Hispanic? Or is it because of conservative values that these people hold to or Christian values that they hold to? Are those the other issues involved? And the media, the mainstream media, which is predominantly liberal and left-wing and sometimes in extreme ways, is going to go after these things. But either way, here's my big question, and I'm wondering about this out loud. Why is it racial? If you differ with Barack Obama, if I have a problem with the president's policies, why do I have to tiptoe on that for fear of someone is going to think that I'm doing it for racial reasons? God knows, it's the last thing on my mind. And I really wanted to be able to vote for our first African-American president, but I couldn't in good conscience, knowing what his radical policies would be if he was elected. And I'm endorsing Senator Ted Cruz for president. But as I wrote, if it ended up that Dr. Ben Carson was a candidate, I'd gladly vote for Dr. Carson and share so many of his values and beliefs and convictions and things like that. But please hear me. Why is it that the same media and others that said you attack Barack Obama, it's race, now they freely attack Ben Carson, Dr. Ben Carson, both of his parents are black, and who had arguably a more typical African-American upbringing than Barack Obama did and suffered some of the hardships that other African-Americans do that Barack Obama didn't suffer. So why is it not race when he is being attacked? I had a black pastor tell me that because he endorsed Republican candidates and because he had strong conservative moral values in politics as well that put him in the Republican camp, he was told he was not black enough. So is blackness a matter of color or is it a matter of cultural issues and cultural status? I think we need to sort that out and we need to call the media to account for its double standard. And yes, Dr. Carson had every right to say, "How is it you're going after me about the most minor things in my own account, which are accurate overall? You're going after me, but the president's records, his college records, are still sealed to this day. Could you imagine that? Something is just uneven." And I'm telling you, it's got nothing to do with color. It's got everything to do with ideology. 866-34-TRUTH. Before I go to the phones, I want to put out a question for my listeners as well, all right? 866-34-TRUTH. I want to put this question out. A caller last week said that he believed that Dr. Carson had a better chance of being elected than Ted Cruz. And since they had many similar beliefs and values, shouldn't I be supporting Dr. Carson? I said, "Well, here's why I'm endorsing Ted Cruz, and here's where I think he's the best man for the job and has a real chance of getting in." But the caller said, "Look, African Americans will vote for Ben Carson. And I said, I'm not sure. I'm not sure that a large percentage of African Americans would not vote Democrat. The vast majority of Jews vote Democrat, and even a higher majority of Black Americans vote Democrat. And I said, as far as Black Americans, I don't think that that many would leave the Democratic Party to vote for Dr. Carson, even though many share his conservative moral values and his Christian faith. So what's your take on that? Especially if you're an African American and you interact with your friends about these things, and maybe a lot of your friends have voted Democrat, do you think if Dr. Carson was the candidate that they would switch from Democrat to Republican? 866-34-TRUTH. I know it's a controversial question, but I do want to put it out. 866-34-TRUTH. Okay, the end of the last hour, Pat Schatzlein and I were talking about this culture in America where you can't offend anybody for any reason. And you can't criticize anybody, and you can't correct anybody, because everybody has to be a winner. And we've cultivated an atmosphere where constructive input criticism is all but gone. And we were talking about the idea of you tough it out, you make it, you push through. And this is what's made our country strong through the years and what makes each generation strong. Now, we were careful to say that we need to be careful in sports, for example, concussion protocol and children getting injured playing football and adults getting injured. And we need to look at whatever we can for safety, whether it's boxing, whether it's other violent sports, etc. But then there's also tough it out, go for it. I just want to get to one caller, LJ in Charlotte. I just know what I see on the screen about you, but I absolutely wanted to hear your story, get your input. Please go for it.
Yes, sir, Dr. Brown. Just want to make one real quick, very quick statement. I'll get to my point. I picked you up on the radio, and I've actually been going through kind of a funk as a preacher and evangelist, and you're like the only one. I've sat under some mega ministries in the last 20 years, and I've been kind of disillusioned with some things, but I resonate your ministry and your speaking. So,
well, thank you, sir. Yeah.
Yes, sir. So basically, as a kid, I grew up in the Ohio Valley, and I played football, wrestled, and I was knocked unconscious with a head-on collision at probably like 6th grade. And the coaches and the older boys began to encourage me in our school system that over time, you have to hit them with more force. You have to be bigger and stronger and build up and use your head, you know, and use your head and don't arm tackle. And the theme of our high school and of our school system as I move forward in the junior high and high school, Dr. Brown, was that if you didn't want to taste blood and tear someone's head off, you didn't play. Mm. Now, at the time, you know, I worshiped football, and you know, I wanted to play pro, and probably had a chance to go to Ohio State. But long story made short, I ended up, after many, many head-to-head contacts, I played in the late 70s, and knocked out many guys and sent guys out on stretchers a few times. But what happened to me was I started to go blind. Mm. And Dr. Brown, the tumor slash growth was not found till approximately 1 year after the initial blurry spots. And upon the surgery, the neurosurgeon left the room, the operating suite, and he spoke to my mother and he said, your son's tumor slash growth was definitely caused by repeated head trauma. And I was 16 years old. And there were a few other hard contacts in baseball, head-to-head, you know, clashes and things of that nature. But I think as I grow older and I hope to get back into ministry and public speaking, my mother passed away last year after I had cared for her for 5 or 6, 7 years. But I definitely feel like that there is and was and has been this kill, maim, blood sport thematic in American sport.
Right,
that I can't support it anymore. And I wanted to hear you and your guests.
Yeah, definitely. So, Pat, how would you respond to that? The be strong, tough it up, suck it up, go forward. When I'm with my trainer and he's pushing me, I got to hear that. And he's, right. come on, just keep going, versus the blood sport mentality. So, LJ, first, thank you for the kind words, and may God's grace fill your life and meet every need. But thank you for raising that concern. What's your take, Pat?
Let me say, LJ, first of all, you can tell you have a true anointing on your life. But I want to say this. My son played college football. And into his freshman year, he began to have unbelievable pain. We found out that he had a disease in his back, and he ended up last year having a major surgery with 2 16-inch rods put down his back and some other things. And there was a moment where my son looked at me, and I looked at him, and he said, Dad, it's not worth it. It's not worth the pain I'm in. And while we believe in that tough get up and go, I absolutely agree with Dr. Brown concerning the concussions and things. I began to get worried. I watched one night, I was in a hotel, and I saw the whole thing on concussions on HBO. And I was watching it deliberately. I wanted to see it. And that it's not the concussions they get in college. It's not the concussions they get in the NFL. It's little league. It's park ball. It's junior high. It's the constant bouncing of your brain in water against the side that literally you get thousands of tiny concussions. And I began to get worried about it. And the reason why I say that is I do believe that there has to be some changes. I do like the targeting rules and some of the other stuff. I don't think they figured out how that's going to work. But it's about time to stand up and say, hey, we got to be careful with what God's given us.
So on the one hand, have a culture where we're strong, where we're tough, but not the blood sports and not the celebration of violence. Thank you for calling. It's poignant, dear brother.
Give us strength to always do what's right.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome back, friends, to The Line of Fire, 866-34-TRUTH. I know a bunch of you want to weigh in regarding Dr. Carson, regarding race issues, so want to get to that in a moment. But please, everybody, if you're within a few hours of Greenville, South Carolina, if you got to drive 3 or 4 hours, so from North Carolina, from all over South Carolina, join me this Saturday with Senator Ted Cruz at a Religious Freedoms Rally. The Benham Brothers will be there. Tony Perkins will be there, a coach who's recently lost his job, football coach, for praying silently at midfield, people who've lost their businesses because they wouldn't support gay marriage and things like that. Please join us. It's 12 to 2 at Bob Jones University, 12 to 2, Greenville, South Carolina. For more info, just go to my website, Ask Dr. Brown, askdrbrown.org. And just click on itinerary. You'll see the details. I'll be opening the service in prayer, and Ted Cruz will be speaking. So please, please join us. Tell your friends about it. Go to tedcruz.org for more info. It's admission is free, but they would really appreciate if you'd go online and get a ticket. The ticket is what gets you in, but the ticket is absolutely free. You find out more at tedcruz.org. Now, that being said, I've made clear, number one, I'm not Senator Cruz's apologist, so if you have a difference with a policy statement he's made or an action of his, I'm not here to be his defender. Also, I'm not here to bash other candidates, and I'll continue to do the best I can to report on things from my perspective as I see them. While I work with Senator Cruz on religious liberty issues, I try to speak into the campaign with any wisdom that I can give to other evangelical leaders that are working with him, and that we pray for God's very best for our country. 866-34-TRUTH. The question I asked earlier is, why is it that, let's say, a white person criticized Barack Obama, you're doing it because of race? And I took exception to that because it's not a racist bone in my body, number one. And number two, I could have cared less if he was green or blue or white or female or male or Jewish or gender. It didn't matter. It's policies. That's my issue. It stands. It's moral issues. But why is it then the media can go all after Ben Carson and they're not being accused of doing it for race? Now, you might say it's all race. Okay, that may be your perspective, but it seems to be a double standard to me that Ben Carson's getting savaged by the media and challenged and questioned and even challenged in what sounds like disrespectful ways to me. And we're not saying that's race, but when the president was criticized, it was race. To me, it seems more ideological than color. Now, your perspective might be it's all color. And that's why they're both treated a certain way. But I want to get your perspective. And then also, if African-Americans, say, 90-something percent of African-Americans voted for Barack Obama, did they do it mainly because he was a Democrat? Or did they do it largely because he was black and a Democrat? Would those same voters now vote for Ben Carson if they agreed with him? Would they leave the Democratic Party? It's a question that I have. I'll tell you, if Bernie Sanders is running for president, I'd care less he's Jewish. He's not getting my vote. let's go to Jamal. All right. We won't go to Jamal. Let's go to Marguerite in Apex, North Carolina. Thanks for calling The Line of Fire.
Hi, Dr. Brown. Thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome.
I like Ben Carson. I read his book, Gifted Hands, and saw the movie, and I was very, very impressed with him and inspired by his life. However, I question whether he's ready for the political scene at the presidential level. I'm kind of
yeah. That's a fair question. That's a very fair question.
I immediately feared of what the media would do to him because of his strong, outspoken conservative and Christian values. As far as the vote goes, I think there will be some that switch because of his race. There's always some people that will go with race, just like there's some others that will go with other things. But I think the majority of them, partly because he's conservative and partly because they're Democrat anyway and some people are politically party-oriented, doesn't matter who's running, I don't think a majority of them are going to switch.
Got it. Yeah, that's my perspective as well. Even though President Obama, from what David Axelrod has told us, lied in 2008 and said that he supported marriage as the union of one man and one woman, even though he didn't. He wanted to redefine marriage. When he was on record much earlier saying he wanted to redefine it, that David Axelrod said he had to do that because the black voters would be much more conservative on family values. So he knew in order to get the vote out that he needed to do that. And yet, Marguerite's suggesting that Ben Carson's conservatism wouldn't draw people in, wouldn't get blacks to leave the Democrats and go to Republicans. Remember, I've said that the great majority of Jews, almost as high a percentage of blacks, have voted Democratic. So we're just looking at things demographically and asking questions of why. And I'm not saying it's right or wrong. I'm just asking questions. All right, we've reconnected with Jamal in Winston-Salem. You know, what's your take, sir?
Hey, want to say thank you for taking my call, first time caller. I want to appreciate I do appreciate your show and how you're on the line for us. Just want to say that first of all.
Well, thank you.
No problem. You're welcome. I think it's more or less a identity thing with the black culture because, as I've heard it said before, we're not really monolithic. You know, we don't think one particular way. We have different ways of thinking, different aspects of our culture. As far as me personally, I've experienced from my own race, people saying, well, you're not black enough, too white, you know, things of that nature. So we ourselves have an identity problem. Some people identify themselves as black, some African-American, some Republican, some Democrat. So you can't brush it all with one brush. We can't do that.
Yep.
So it's a thing of, from anybody else's standpoint, trying to figure it out. You can't hit it with one silver bullet. So the best thing to do is what you're doing right now, hit up on the issues and just try to explain that it's not racial, that it's just strictly issues. Yep. But unfortunately, you're going to have some people that are going to say it's racial anyway. But, you know, that's just something you're going to have to deal
with,
unfortunately.
And we got to have the conversation, Jamal. I committed years ago that I don't care how challenging it gets and controversial, I'm going to step into these issues because we got to have a conversation. And I have learned massively from my callers, just getting different perspectives. Because, look, we're all limited. You know, we only know so many people and travel in so many circles. But when you open up the phone lines across America, you get so many perspectives that are useful and that are helpful. And that really, you can kind of then put it together prayerfully and see how it works. Hey, thank you for calling, sir. Much appreciated. 866-34-TRUTH. Hey, we've got just 45 seconds before the break.
Yeah.
Can the gospel really cut through racial barriers? Pat Schatz line. Yes or no?
You know, I was just sitting here thinking when I was pastoring, our church exploded with black, with white, with all the colors, all the way around, because the only color that matters is the color red. My daughter's Chinese. We were raised never to see that. And I'm from Birmingham, Alabama, born in Detroit, but raised in Birmingham. And absolutely the gospel can, because when it boils down to it, most of my closest ministry friends are of different nationalities. True Christians don't care.
Yeah. And somehow that's where it has to start. Believers working together. We've done it some, but boy, we've got a long ways to go. We'll be right back.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
All right, so I raised an issue, and we'll put out a video about this from the broadcast next day or so. But I raised the issue, why is it that when President Obama was questioned or attacked, that many Americans, many black Americans, said, it's racial. You're attacking him because of his race. Then Dr. Ben Carson is getting attacked by the media. Now remember, his mother and father are black, and he was raised in situations that he can better relate to more African Americans as far as his earlier upbringing than Barack Obama could. Raised by a white mother and grandparents. So, an extraordinary, as much as I differ with our president, what an extraordinary achiever with obstacles he had and single mother and all of these things, not the father to raise him. So I commend him for his achievements. I just differ with him deeply on his values. But why is it when the media really goes after Dr. Carson? I was listening to a press conference. I thought, man, he's just letting them go back and forth, and it's almost disrespectful towards him. How come people aren't saying that's race? And it makes me ask the question, is it more ideology than race? In other words, as one black pastor told me, that blackness was not just defined by the color of his skin, but by where he stood on social and political issues. And for example, because he stood with Republican candidates, he was, quote, not black enough. And again, the question would be, if Dr. Carson ended up being the presidential candidate, if it was Dr. Carson, would black Americans who have overwhelmingly, well over 90-95%, voted Democrats? They voted for Al Gore. They voted for white candidates before Barack Obama. And then they came out even more strongly for Barack Obama. Would they then migrate over and say, okay, we're going to vote for Dr. Carson because we like him, we like his values, and he's a black American that can set a great example for our nation too? Or would ideology keep them in the Democratic Party? And we can ask this about all kinds of groups, all kinds of groups. I believe that white evangelicals who overwhelmingly vote Republican, I believe that they'd have no problem voting for Dr. Carson as far as his values, because skin color wouldn't be the issue. Now, again, everybody has things that are important, and we're just trying to sort these things out. 866-34-TRUTH. Let's go to Daphne. All right, well, Daphne, who's identified as African-American, said that she would vote for Dr. Carson as opposed to a Democrat. As you know, I've endorsed Senator Ted Cruz for president. In fact, they sent out my endorsement. I think they've got 60,000-70,000 faith-based leaders on a database, their email database, and they sent my endorsement out to all of them and asked them to share it with others. But in my endorsement, I made clear why I was standing with Senator Cruz. However, if it ended up that Dr. Carson was the presidential candidate or in a very unlikely way, Governor Huckabee, I would gladly vote for them. I'm not here to bash other candidates or to be Senator Cruz's apologist, but for quite a few reasons, I have endorsed him. But doing my best on this radio show to look at the larger issues always in the fairest possible way. Let's go to Fort Worth, Texas. Juan, welcome to the Line of Fire.
Thank you, Dr. Brown. I'm sorry if I don't speak too fast. English is my second language, but I want to weigh in on Dr. Carson's situation. Specifically, I think the smear campaign that it's taking over, especially since last week against him, has very little to do with his race and has a lot to do with the fact that he is a believer. And the strongest part of his testimony or the strongest side on his whole public image is his own testimony. And that's why he resonates so much with people. To me, the one thing that is actually leaning our family more toward voting for him, it's because out of all the candidates, he's been the most outspoken about his faith. And that really resonates with our family.
Got it. All right. So the attack on Dr. Carson, in Juan's view, as an Hispanic American, I would assume, is not based on his race, but based on his beliefs.
God of light, hear our cry. Send the fire.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
All right, let me grab a few more calls. We're not asking who you're supporting for president. You may not know. You may have a strong conviction about it. We're not asking that. We're asking for your perspective on when President Obama's been criticized. People say, well, that's race-based. Now, some of it may have been. It never was for me, and I personally took exception to that accusation, but thought, all right, fine, I'll just win people over to recognize over the years that that's just not the issue with me. And thankfully, we've got a wonderful listening audience, tremendously diverse, that deeply recognizes that, and because of which we can really talk through difficult issues. When Dr. Ben Carson's been attacked, how come people aren't saying that's race? And then the other question is, would just your opinion, especially as an African-American, would African-Americans leave the Democratic Party in droves, at least for the presidential election, and vote for Dr. Carson as their candidate because they resonate with his conservative moral values and think that he could be a tremendous example of a black man who's gone from nothing to where he is, much as our president, Barack Obama, has gone from nowhere to where he is, be a great example, and therefore solidarity with him would trump solidarity with the Democratic Party. 866-34-TRUTH. Let's go to Rick. All right, folks, you're really antsy today. In Winston-Salem, an anonymous caller, welcome to the Line of Fire.
Yes, I wanted to voice my opinion on it because I listen to you mostly every day, and I just wanted to start off by saying, like the other callers, that I don't see you being racist at all, because I like a lot of things that you talk about, because I do get to listen to you.
But well, thank you.
With President Barack Obama, I think we voted for him because I am a black person, and I'm black enough, I guess. I listen to the other caller say that sometimes people don't think he's black enough. But we voted for him because, well, I know in my sector, because he was a black man, and it was so awesome, you know, just being
yes.
a black man run for presidency.
I understand.
But during
that.
The course of his presidency, I heard you say a moment ago, which sparked me to call in, the disrespect level that Ben Carson is already going through, whereas Barack Obama has went through that disrespect level, and he's pushed it under the rug so many times how people disrespected him on the news and in the media. And I guess it's turning the other cheek is what the good book would say it is, but sometimes he's turned the other cheek a little bit too much. And I know for Ben Carson, when you sit there and you listen to him and you see him doing the exact same thing, I know for me, I'm not going to vote for him because he shows weakness already with the way he allows people to talk to him.
That's interesting perspective. Wow.
He shows
all right.
A whole lot of,
all right. Yeah, so you're saying that you feel that President Obama was disrespected because of his race, that Dr. Carson is being disrespected because of his race, and that you don't like the way, regardless of why he's being disrespected, you feel that he's not being strong enough in his responses to basically say, hey, you don't talk like that to me. You want to be in my press conference. You don't interrupt me. You don't talk like that to me. Treat me with some respect. Regardless of whether it's race or not, you don't like the way he's handling it. That's a fascinating perspective.
And it's not so much as the color of his skin. It's that he doesn't stand up for respect. Okay, because if you look at Bush, you look at Reagan, you look at all the other presidents, they stood up for respect. And if you stand in front of the nation and you lack in respect, then there's a level that I know me as a single woman and other women look at you and say, okay, come on. When are you going to stand up and show the man side of
it? Interesting. Okay. Hey, thank you. Thank you first for being a regular listener. But thank you for weighing in with that. That's, again, perspective that I thought about it a little bit just watching the press conference. Like, okay, I know you're being patient, and I know he's a brilliant guy, and he's willing to debate issues. But I just felt at a certain point you just got to step up and say, hey, listen.
That's right.
And I know he is long-suffering and all of that, but Thank you. Very, very interesting perspective. Much appreciated. Sitting with Pat Schatzlein before I go back to the phones. Pat, this is a younger generation that has not grown up with respect for authority.
Right.
And then we have the whole social media phenomenon where anybody can say whatever in the world they want about anybody and almost with no consequences. How do we cultivate respect in the younger generation?
You know, when I was a kid, I had a teacher that said to me, "Your rights end where my rights begin." And that tripped me up for a while. I didn't understand it. I believe that that boils down to dads. I believe it boils down to fathers rising up and leading their homes. And when dad is absent, we have a generation of young men that have no concept of how to wear their pants or shake a hand or look a man in the eye. And so I believe it's time for men to rise up and lead with a moral authority and lead, and not just with words, not just words, but with action of leading their homes and walking with authority. When we have lost dads in this generation, and I teach this a lot at men's conferences across America, without the dads standing there with the authority, we have a generation of young men. It's Isaiah chapter 3, Isaiah chapter 4. That one man, a child will grab another child and say, "You be our leader." Isaiah 4 goes on to say, seven women will grab one man and say, "You don't have to give us anything. You don't have to pay our bills. Just give us a name." We have a generation looking for identity. Respect is lost when they have. I always say the greatest love I could show my kids is how I treat my wife. And my son will tell you to this day, he said it in our 25th anniversary video he sent to us about 4 or 5 weeks ago. We've been married 25 years. He said, "Dad," in the video, he said, key leaders all over America sent videos, but the one that mattered was with my son, because he said, "Dad, you taught me how to treat my wife, and because of that, my greatest respect is to you." It all starts in the house.
Can pastors and leaders also do things where, on the one hand, they are not aloof from the people, they don't separate themselves as superstars, but they cultivate respect for ministry and cultivate respect for God?
Absolutely. And I think that pastors, I've been saying this, I wrote about it in I Am Remnant, that no more celebrity Christianity. We're not called to smell like the green room. We're called to smell like sheep. And pastors that are in there, they're the coaches, they're speaking life, they're giving direction. And I'll say it for the African-American community, for the black community. One of the things that I love, is so many of my friends, is they are rising up and taking authority in the church and teaching young men and women how to be what they're called to be.
In fact, in an African-American culture, there's much more of a culture of honor.
That's exactly right.
Than and in our white Christian circles.
Well, I think they understand standing in the gap. I look for someone to stand in the gap. Even more than white Protestant churches or evangelical churches. Mm. You see it more in the African, coaching, football, park football, in the rougher neighborhoods. You see men standing up and saying, "Wait a minute. That boy over there doesn't have a dad. I'll show him how. Walk with him."
Got it. So, friends, it starts with each of us where we are. Even if we make a difference, a substantial difference in one life, that's one life. All right, before I continue the conversation with Dr. Carson, we've been talking about cultural issues and changes.
Right.
I want to go to Chris in Orlando. You've been holding a long time, sir. Thank you for your patience. But you had something having to do with generational issues that you wanted to raise. So welcome to the Line of Fire. Thanks so much for your patience.
Hi, Dr. Brown. I appreciate it. First time caller. Took this call about a month ago, and unfortunately, I was calling at work, so I didn't have the time to wait. Can I just lead with, I believe, 1 Corinthians 7:8. So that would be, "I say, therefore, to the unmarried and widows, it is good for them to abide even as I. But if they cannot contain, let them marry, for it is better to marry than to burn." And I bring this up because I am a father of a beautiful 2.5 girl, and I'm already thinking about way down the road. So briefly, I've just noticed in the last 20, 30 years, I'm only 36, so older father, that we've just kind of gone away as a culture from, you know, raising our kids to look forward to marriage, looking forward to being parents, to just like go out there and party. And I'm a web designer, and I work with a lot of younger people, and they don't want to be married. They don't want to have kids. They just want to continue to live the good life, you know, go post their pictures online and just, you know, show everyone what a good time they're having. So
yeah, a lot of them are sexually active younger. Sometimes they even get burnt out on sex because it's just so cheap. But Pat, we've just got about 30, 40 seconds before the break. Is the key to celebrate a culture that celebrates marriage and family so that that becomes something that our kids really want to grow up into?
Absolutely. And the thing is, we've got to be able to stand up and say, let me show you. I say it at large youth conferences. I will say this deliberately. I've been married 25 years and the sex gets better. And the reason why is they've seen all the stigma of the talk shows that, or the TV shows, the comedy shows, and what they don't understand is that unity, that bond, that covenant that takes place because it's not been taught correctly. Even in the church, it's been taboo, and we've got to teach a generation it gets better
and then,
more powerful.
And then covenant. When family, we're talking about kids, we're not just talking about, well, I like this person, I want to spend time with them. Chris, the more that we celebrate family life, and the more it becomes a wonderful thing to be a mother, to be a father, get that in our kids so that that's what they want to do, and they'll be productive in many ways.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
All right, two big announcements. If you are in the Charlotte, North Carolina area, this Thursday night, I'm doing a talk for a local Christian campus group on same-sex marriage, progress or regress. Now, honestly, I don't have the slightest idea who's going to show. We might have 11 Christian campus students sitting there, and three radio listeners, and five young people from our school of ministry. Or we may have 100 people, 70 of which are totally hostile to every word I say. It's not a big auditorium event. You know, it's a classroom event. But I'm hoping if they have a big auditorium, I'm not expecting a big crowd. A debate, you know, we get a big crowd. But anyway, if you're anywhere near Charlotte, North Carolina, Thursday night, join me at 7 o'clock at the UNC Charlotte campus. And we've got the details on my website, AskDrBrown.org. Click on itinerary. It's free, open to the public. You can just walk in. If you differ with me, you're a regular listener, you differ, please come. I'd love to meet you face-to-face. It would be a joy. And if you want to come and hear my perspective and then get to ask questions, especially it's for students, but outsiders are welcome. That's Thursday night at 7. Then Saturday, if you're within 4 hours of Greenville, South Carolina, come on, it's going to be a historic event. A Religious Liberties Rally. Senator Ted Cruz is hosting it, will be speaking. The Benham Brothers will be emceeing. I'll be leading in prayer. Tony Perkins will be speaking. Those who've lost jobs and other things because of their Christian faith, lost positions, lost income, because of their Christian faith, they'll be speaking 12 to 2. It's being hosted at Bob Jones University, the largest auditorium available that day, 12 to 2 this Saturday, Greenville, South Carolina. Now, here's the deal. You need a ticket to get in, but the tickets are free. This way, they just have an idea of how many people to expect. To get your free tickets, you get as many as you want. Get 100, come with your church group. Go to tedcruz.org. TedCruz.org. This is not going to be primarily a campaign event on why you should vote for Ted Cruz. It is going to be a religious liberties event because this is an issue that is very dear to his heart. That's Saturday, 12 noon to 2, Greenville, South Carolina. I'm driving an hour and a half, 2 hours to get there. Then I got to turn around and be in Winston-Salem for ministry that night. In fact, that's right. That's right. Winston-Salem, all my friends in Winston-Salem, Saturday night and Sunday morning, I'm speaking. So we'll give you details of that. But put that on your calendar, too. Come on. North Carolina, South Carolina, this is your week. 866-34-TRUTH. Back to the question of Ben Carson. Why is it that when President Obama was attacked, people immediately said that's race? When Ben Carson's being attacked, hardly anyone is saying it's due to race. Is it more ideology than race? 866-34-TRUTH. David in Charlotte, North Carolina, thanks for calling the Line of Fire. What's your view, sir?
Hi, thank you for taking my call, Dr. Brown. I'm African American. I'm a physician, and I just really would have a very difficult time voting for Dr. Carson, I think.
Because of lack of experience? I'm sorry. Sorry to interrupt. Go ahead.
I think his views are so out of touch with the experience of most African Americans. And I mean, just some of the things that he said that just strike us as just being so outlandish. To compare,
for example?
To compare Obamacare with slavery, when slavery was a system that divided families, that abused a race of people for the hundreds of years that it did. For him to equate that with an insurance system that's designed to try to help people that are uninsured. And again, I just think his views are just so out of touch with most of our experiences. And the conservative viewpoint that says government is the enemy and government has not done anything to help uplift people or do anything positive and good for people, when he and his experience took advantage of, or didn't take advantage, but benefited from welfare, benefited from programs that were designed to help uplift people that are in poverty and people that are poor. Mm. And for him to just completely forget his history and the history of our race of people, I think that's why there's just not a lot of support or accolade coming from the African American community for him.
All right, so let me just jump in because I'm short on time and I want to get your perspective, sir. A fascinating perspective. All right, so I understand the slavery comment and how extreme that sounded. And although I'm not a fan of, quote, Obamacare, I do fully understand why you take exception to that, as many did. But what I find fascinating is his upbringing, having to overcome things, being raised by two black parents, as opposed to President Obama being raised by a white mother and white grandparents and having a very, very different setting in life. That's what's interesting to me, that you feel that you can't relate to him. Is it so the way he's finally come out that you can't relate to him? I would think his upbringing would be more similar to that of many African-Americans than Barack Obama's.
It's true that his upbringing may be closer to a large majority or to a significant contingent of, or not contingent, but a significant group of African-Americans. But his views and the things that he expresses are just so out of touch with what most of us have experienced and who've come out of poverty and have had opportunities presented to us that we've taken advantage of. We think President Obama speaks more to the view of most African Americans that opportunities and doors that are open to you and that you can take advantage of are good, that uplift our race and that help. And I'm not talking about, you know, welfare being such a
okay. Because I was going to raise that. I was going to raise welfare and just say that certainly doesn't empower
I'm not applauding, you know, all of the aspects of welfare.
Got it.
But for Ben Carson to act like he didn't benefit from anything that the government provided his family, and he didn't benefit from doors that were swung wide open to allow him to attend an Ivy League school. Granted, he's an intelligent man. He's demonstrated that. He became a very renowned physician, and he should be applauded for that. But to think that he pulled himself up by his own bootstraps and did it without any benefit from doors of opportunity being open to him is ludicrous. And he just it's almost like he's got amnesia about where he came from. And that's why we find it so hard to we're scratching our heads. Where does he come from with these views that without some help or some opportunity, doors can be opened to people who've been denied opportunity for centuries and for decades?
Yeah, and David, I've just got to jump in because I'm out of time. I wanted to give you the maximum time to express your views, but you've opened up a whole other fascinating discussion here. Friends, phone lines have been jammed. We'll continue this. We'll continue this discussion in the days to come this very week, all right? So thank you, David, for weighing in. I'm out of time, but we'll continue to be continued and connect with my guest, Pat Schatzline. Get online, find out about his important, life-changing books. My bottom line today, unless we sit and talk, we'll never learn from each other.